what? This is a good round of the NBL. Good individual performances. Good performances from the team.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. We're looking at round 13. There were a bunch of games in this round. Let's take a look at it. Let's start with the first game of the round. Illawarra and Adelaide. So 7th place Illawarra played 5th place Adelaide. Illawarra 8-10 coming into this game. Adelaide 9-9. And Adelaide took care of business. Illawarra 96, Adelaide 102. Look at the scoring breakdown by quarter. Illawarra came out strong, plus 10 in the first quarter, 32-22. Then the second, Illawarra cooled off, 21, Adelaide 29. Third quarter, Illawarra back up again, 25-21. And then it was all the fourth quarter for Adelaide, 18-30. And that set them up for the win. You look at Adelaide top performers, Nathan Sobey was pretty good in this one. 23 points, 8 of 11, 4 of 5 from downtown, 72% overall. 6 assists, only 5 points in the first half, and then turned it on for 18 in the second. Ramon Moore, 22 points, 7 of 11, 63%, 5 assists, 2 steals. That combination of those two is kind of fun to watch. And then Demetrius Congo with a bit of a return to form, 19 points, 87% from the field, 6 rebounds, 3 of them offensive, 4 steals. You look at Illawarra, Todd Blanchfield had a nice little game, 19 points on 58% shooting, 6 assists, 4 rebounds, 2 steals. Brian Conklin had a really nice round, and this was the first game of it for him, 22 points, 52%, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. Thumbs down, a couple of guys here from both teams. Jordan Jett played 26 minutes, only 5 points, 2 of 8, 25%, 4 assists, 2 turnovers. Jacob Wiley for Adelaide only played 20 minutes, which is low for him, 4 points, 2 rebounds. Joey Wright preferring to go with Harry Froling, the rookie. Cedric Jackson for Illawarra was again not on his best game, 22 minutes, 8 points, 4 of 10, 3 assists, 2 turnovers. You got to imagine like both those guys, Jett and Jackson, would have been guarding or were guarding Sobey and Moore and gave up heck of a lot of points, just wasn't their night. Biggest team stat discrepancies, the 3 places where Illawarra lost this one. Field goal attempts, this is what kept Illawarra in the game. Illawarra were plus 19 in field goal attempts, 78-59. Offensive rebounds again kept Illawarra in this game. They got 12, Adelaide only 7, plus 5 advantage for Illawarra. And then the thing that just won it for Adelaide was their intensity. They got to the line. The foul line is where this game was won for Adelaide. It was what kept them hanging around until they made their final push in the fourth. Illawarra was 7 of 9 from the free throw line. Adelaide went 24 of 29, plus 20 attempts at the line for Adelaide. So that was 17 points plus at the line for Adelaide. They were just more intense, both defensively and offensively, and were passing the ball more, and Illawarra were caught flat-footed. I'm looking at the eye test, so I watched this one. Sobey in the fourth quarter gets 9 points and 2 assists with a great full-court pass to Maromo Moore for a 2-1. He came out to start the fourth and was determined to win this one. He had a beautiful little sweeping hook. You know, when the game was right there to either hang around or lose or win it, it had Sobey's fingerprints all over it. Cedric Jackson had a bad play. It was admittedly the 32-second mark. It was Scramble Town, but jacked up a fadeaway shot, 3, that just wasn't there. And then Jordan Jett had an air ball wide open that were shots that, you know, if you hit them, you got a chance, and they missed them, and it was over. Again, a bad play in the final minute. Illawarra not doing a foul when they should have, wasted 15 seconds off the clock, put them under huge pressure. Adelaide had 9 turnovers in the first quarter, and the Hawks shot well in the first half, and that was kind of it. Player of the game, Sobey. Really good from him. Moving on, we go Sydney, who are top of the table, play New Zealand in Sydney. Sydney coming in with 12-6, New Zealand 8-9. End score, Sydney 100, New Zealand Breakers 92. In the first quarter, it was pretty even, 22-20 in favor of Sydney. Next quarter was tied up, 32 apiece. Third quarter, New Zealand got the lead by one, 22-23. And then it was in the fourth quarter that Sydney won this game, 24-17. So plus seven in that quarter for the 192 win. Sydney's top performers, I thought their best was Kevin Lish, 20 points, 3 of 6 from downtown, 3 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal. Jerome Randall, his change of speed was really on show in this one. His ability to break guys down off the dribble and score for himself or find a guy was critical. 18 points, 3 of 4 from downtown, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals. He's been hovering around that sort of mid, you know, 4 or 5, 6 rebounds the last couple of games. He's chipping in on the rebounds to help this team. David Ware had a return to form, 19 points, 2 of 3 from the outside, 9 rebounds, 2 steals. Played really well, played really good D for the most part. Brian Bowen was the winner in this game, though. He blew it out in the fourth quarter. He had 22 minutes, he had 12 points, he shot 50% in the field and 4 rebounds. For New Zealand, Ty Wesley, 16 points, 50% from the field, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 blocks. A real hatchet man for New Zealand, did a bit of everything. Was really putting his body into guys in the low block. Jared Weeks as well, 15 points, a rebound, 2 assists, 60% from the field. We look at the big matchup in this one. The big advertised matchup was, of course, Andrew Bogut and Sean Long. Bogut, down in the points column, 9-20. But up in the percentage column, Bogut shot 80% from the field. Long, 42%. Free throws. Bogut only took the one and made it. Sean Long went to the line 5 times, only made 1 of them. Offensive rebounds, they were tied at 2 apiece. Total rebounds, Sean Long had the edge by 1, 9-10. Bogut with 5 assists, though, to Sean Long, 0. Sean Long was not interested in passing the ball in this game. There's one play in particular right in the fourth quarter where Bogut blocked him, where Sean Long caught it, actually had an open guy on the wing. I actually think it was Jared Weeks or Illy, and I had him wide open, didn't take it, put the ball on the floor, tried to back into Bogut, and Bogut was there the whole time. Just the shot just wasn't there, and he got blocked. Bogut blocked it into the backboard, came back off the backboard into Sean Long's head and went the other way. Bogut had 3 blocks, Sean Long had none. I mean, the difference really was that New Zealand's game plan was built around Sean Long. They played zone pretty much all game to protect him from foul trouble. And, you know, it's against a team where in the Sydney Kings you shouldn't have to. Sydney Kings are an older, slower team. You don't want to play zone and give them a chance to play on the back foot and make passes and think about what they're doing. And, you know, that's why they gave up threes at such a high clip. Sydney shot 40%, 9 of 22 from downtown, and it just didn't have to happen. New Zealand were very quick once they got the ball. I felt they should have applied defensive pressure, and they just didn't because Sean Long demanded that they didn't. And, you know, he obviously outscored Bogut by more than double, but if you're going to have your whole team centered around you, you need more than 20. 20 points on the type of defense they played against Sydney, it was not a good economy, and it's part of the reason they lost. Biggest team stat discrepancies, fast break points, Sydney 12, New Zealand 21, plus 9 in New Zealand, and it showed they were a lot quicker in transition. Not that Sydney's transition defense was bad, I just really felt they were beaten in a foot race. Next was the 3-point field goal percentage that I spoke about. Sydney were 40%, 9 of 22. New Zealand, on the other hand, 29%, 8 of 27. So, you know, it took 5 more attempts, made 1 less, plus 11% to Sydney there. Assists, Sydney 24, New Zealand 19, you know, 5 assist discrepancy. It doesn't sound like a lot, but when you think about it, that most of those assists went on to threes, you know, it's anywhere from 10 to 15 points difference, and that's more than the margin of this game. Key points for this one was Brad Newley was off tonight or in this game. He just didn't have it with him. He had 7 points, 2 rebounds, 1 of 7, 14% from the field. But it was Brian Bowen was the hero of this game. If I had to give a player of the game, it'd be Kevin Lish, but certainly the impact guy, the guy who won this, is Brian Bowen. Missed 2 dunks in the fourth quarter, grabbed 2 rebounds, scored all of his 12 points in the fourth, grabbing an offensive rebound that he scored off. You know, he made things happen. Could have easily had 16, missed 2, you know, wide open dunks. And it just really made me think that the Kings are going to need good minutes out of him. Ding doesn't have it, and they need some scoring, slashing scoring and rebounding from the wing. and rim protection from the ring. So often, Newley is sometimes late on that second rotation. So Bogut goes to the first guy, obviously, contests that shot. And they get little dump passes or they throw it in the air sometimes for guys. And Newley's not able to cover both of those. Certainly wasn't in this game. That's where Brian Bowen can be such an asset, because his rim protection, I mean, he can get right up there. And also, he's a guy who, even unlike Bogut, I think Brian Bowen might be the best rebounder on his team, because he gets it off the rim, you know? There's one thing for a rebound to be shot, come off the rim, and, you know, you get a good position and it lands to you and you get it. But he's the type of guy who will go over guys for rebounds, and it's important. And in this game, it really showed. But the question is, can he do it consistently? I mean, he hasn't shown it through three quarters of the season thus far, and it probably seems unlikely that he will. But gosh, it'd be nice. The other note I've got here is Randall. Jerome Randall's often left out of the best point guards in the league conversation. I mean, his scoring is not that of Bryce Cotton, and his sort of, I wouldn't even say playmaking play. Casper Ware is probably the better defender, I suppose. He has that little bit more size, but Randall's change of speed is the best in the NBL. Bryce Cotton's obviously the quickest and I think got the best shot. But as far as being able to break guys down, it's Jerome Randall. The question I was asking myself when I was watching this one was, Bogut's probably going to end up as the MVP of the league, but Jerome Randall might be the most impactful Sydney King, or the most reliable and important Sydney King. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if we saw an awkward situation where Andrew Bogut wins the MVP, but Jerome Randall wins sort of the club award for Sydney. Anyway, that was it. Sydney coming away, 100-92 winners over New Zealand. Our next game of the round was Perth, who were third on the table, 12-7, playing the last placed, eighth place Cairns Taipans, 2-15 at that stage. Perth going down 79-81 in a great game. A tight, hard-fought game at which Cairns, you know, wanted to give it away. Played great in the first two quarters, the first half especially, modest in the third, and then totally collapsed in the fourth, something they did in both games this round, and were lucky to come away with a win in this one. Top performers obviously was Mello Trimble. He's the player of this round. He had 32 in this one and 42 against Melbourne, which we'll discuss later. He was 10 of 19, 6 of 7 from downtown, 7 rebounds and assist, you know, against Damian Martin, who's regarded as, you know, the biggest and best defensive player in the NBL for a long time. Nate Jawai, 14 points, 66% from the field, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, a block. You know, let's say those 5 assists were all layups. That adds him, you know, another 10 points to his team. So he's, you know, a 25-point impact sort of player. Jawai was really good when he caught the ball down low, drawing a double team every time. That Perth had no one who could even come close to either A, stopping him, B, you know, stopping him from drawing a double team, stopping him from getting in a scoring position, and 3, no one who could really throw off his passes. You know, unlike in the Melbourne game where he threw away a number of turnovers, he had a couple in this game, but not many. But he was able to really pick them apart. DJ Newble had a nice little game, 13 points, 50% from the field, 4-4 from free throws. And he was the one who played defense on Bryce Cotton mostly and did a pretty good job, as you'll see. Devin Hall, decent game, 11 points, 40%, 3 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals. The 4 steals is what I'm looking at there. Most of them actually converted for fast break points down the other end. Looking at the Wildcats, Tariko White, 17 points, 5 rebounds, 60% from the field, 3 assists. You know, his standard sort of game, he always hovers around the high teens. Nick Kay, 18 points, 53% from the field, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 turnovers, which is a lot for him. Bryce Cotton, 20 points, 26% from the field, 7 of 26. You know, Perth went 30 of 69. 4 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal, a turnover. Thumbs down in this game. I just felt Angus Brandt, 7 points, 42%, 9 rebounds, 3 assists in 21 minutes. Just went missing. You wouldn't be at all wrong if you were surprised to see him on the court at times. He just didn't have a particularly impactful game. The other thumbs down is the Wildcat bench. 14 points in 56 minutes. You know, 1 offensive rebound, 4 assists. Mitch Norton and Steindl were passable. They gave something. Even if it didn't translate into numbers, they were a threat. They were something out there, but no one else. You know, for a bench to score 14 points in 56 minutes, they basically had their own game. I think the biggest problem with the bench is there's some talent on that bench. You know, they've shown it in the past. They're a little bit older now and they need to find something. But the biggest problem is when that bench comes in, they defer to the starters so much, and in particular Bryce Cotton. They're just standing and waiting for him to do something, and it's not working right now. Certainly didn't work in this one. Team stat discrepancies, free throws. Perth, 8 of 13, 61%. Cairns, 13 of 16, 81%. Plus 5 at the line, you know. This is a two-point game. 5 points at the line means everything. They're easy points. Offensive rebounds. Perth were 5, Cairns were 6. Now, that's only an advantage of 1 to Cairns, but remember that Perth grab an average of 13 offensive rebounds. Down almost a third. Cairns down 12. They mean more to Perth. And also, Cairns didn't have a heck of a lot of offensive rebounds because Mello Trimble was shooting it and shooting the lights out. And then the field goal percentages. 43% from Perth, 49% from Cairns. Perth, 11 of 28 from downtown, 39%. Cairns, 10 of 18, 55%. So Perth took 10 more three-pointers to sink one more than Cairns. You just can't do that. Key points here. I just felt like Bryce Cotton in this game felt the pressure to do something and score every time he had the ball. He was coming off his usual double screen as he comes to the top of the keyway, and he was jacking it. Some of the times it was there, and he just missed, and that's on him, but sometimes it just wasn't there. But in his defense, like, it's a shot he now has to take, and teams are... you're knowing he's going to take it, and it's a tough one. So what I'd love to see is, you know, he comes off those two picks, catches it and doesn't straight away shoot it, but he's looking to see that second action. You know, those two guys, are they going to roll for each other? Are the two screeners going to screen for each other? Is one going to dive? Is one going to go to the corner? You know, something different. I wouldn't mind seeing that. Typically, it was the two big guys setting the screens, but what I'd love to do is see that second screen, that high screen being set by Steindl, and see if he can't set that screen and then flare out to the three-point line so that space is cleared up for Cotton to maybe drive and make a pass out, or just a different action. Cairns looked good when they were going through Outback Shack. He was making nice catches. His hands were good. He was dunking when he was finishing. He was finding guys. That should be their offense going forward. I never watched them when they were terrible, but I've started watching them of late when they've become, you know, the number one upset team. And when they give him the ball, they look good. The other note I've got here is the lack of an athletic big guy or tall big guy for Perth protecting the rim is starting to show. You know, Angus Brandt's a big, tough guy, 6'6", Nick Kay, 6'7", but it's not the likes of Nathan Juai. Or Andrew Bogut, or Sean Long, or Josh Boone worrying guys out of points. It's just not the same. The other thing I wanted to look at is Tirico White. So he's come under a lot of scrutiny, I think unfairly. I think Perth's choice not to get a third in point has put Tirico White under extreme pressure and unnecessary pressure. I think he's played really consistently. He's had a couple of bad fourth quarters, and Corey Homicide Williams was particularly... derogatory of his fourth quarters, and rightfully so. He hadn't scored in about four or five of them in the last couple of games, five games. So what I did was I actually recorded Tirico White's touches in this game in the fourth quarter, because on the Trash Talk podcast, Homicide had said how Corey Williams had said how he wasn't impressed with Tirico White, and then the conversation was had that he wasn't getting touches. I think Mark Worthington said that. So I thought, well, I'll record Tirico White's touches and see what he did with them. He got 8 touches in the fourth quarter. The first was an assist to Nick Kay from the wing. They started their offense. He caught it and made a pass. Simple. The second was a high pick and roll. He came off it and he made a bad pass to a turnover. The third was a high pick and roll and he got to the basket for 2. His fourth catch was a 3 catch and shoot from the top. He was wide open. He missed it. Bad miss. You know, they're the ones you hit and you're the hero, and you miss them and you're the zero. And when you're struggling like that, that was one that he should have hit. Fifth touch was actually an offensive rebound he got, and he turned that into an assist. His sixth touch was a mishandle in the backcourt, nearly turned it over, but didn't. His seventh touch was a defensive rebound, and he was fouled by Lucas Walker and hit two free throws. And then his eighth touch was a hockey assist to Cotton, who made a three. I forget who he made the pass through, but he kind of beat his man a little bit, made a nice little pass, touch pass onto Cotton, and three. So, I mean, you look at his touches, and they're all, except for the turnover and the missed three, which, you know, you can't make every play and you can't hit every shot, is pretty good. I'm a Tarico White fan. I think he's a good player. I think Perth just relies so heavily on those imports, and in particular Bryce Cotton. It's taken away from a lot of people's games. So that's good. And the other thing I came away with this game was that, you know, Nate Jawai, I think if his health was better and his endurance was better, he could be the best center in the league. The way he finishes, he's got his body, he is just so big. But when he gets tired, he's not as good. Yeah, he can pass, he's so strong. Plus, he just draws a double team. Teams are terrified of him down low. They don't even let him, they let him catch it, but they do not let him make a move. They always send a double team. When you got a player like that, that's so important. But anyway, that's how it was. Melo Trimble, I mean, we didn't speak much about him. 32 points. He was just hitting them from everywhere. He was hot. He had been told to look for his shot. Boy, gee. He got great looks and he was, you know, really working it. I don't know what to say. Like, there was a couple of times where he was shooting it from court to court and making it. He was on fire. But, and Perth now, you know, with this loss at home, after a huge road away stand from the Hotman Cup, to lose this one really puts a shake to their season, especially now that the club's come out and said they're not going to sign a third import. The thought is, do you just renege on that and do it anyway? They'd have to cut someone or hope for an injury, but, you know, we don't want to do that. So, you know, Perth's in trouble. Next game of the round was Adelaide, who were 4th, 10-9, coming into this game against the 5th place Brisbane, 10-9, tied record, all in percentage. And Brisbane got up in this one, 102-90. Scoring breakdown, first quarter, Adelaide 24 to Brisbane 21. Adelaide 25-24 in the second, third quarter 27-22, and then it was in the fourth quarter that Brisbane made their run. Adelaide scored 14 points in that quarter, Brisbane 35. They just went crazy to pull out the win. Top performers for Brisbane, in no particular order, I've got Matty Hodgson, 13 points, 100, just hit everything from the field, 100%, 12 rebounds, great first half. Most of his points were in the first. Cam Bairstow, 20 points, 75% from the field, 7 rebounds. Lamar Patterson had a sneaky, almost triple-double, 16 points, 54% from the field, 10 rebounds, 8 assists. He is a hatch. He's one of my favorite imports in the league. And then the guy who just cracks this list is Ruben Tarungi, 12 points, 44% from the field, 4 rebounds. Came out with big plays down the stretch that we'll talk about. Underperformers for this game, I'm going to say Dennis Johnson, had 18 points, shot 33% from the field, like just in his defense, could not get a call. A lot of the imports complained about not getting calls. DJ was absolutely hammered on this play. Some really bad calls. Two turnovers. And obviously gave up a lot of points to Bairstow, to Hodgson and others. But as much as I was talking up Sobey before, Nathan Sobey, this was not his game. 4 points, 15% from the field, 0-3 from downtown, 6 turnovers. Just couldn't get it going. And credit to Jason Kadee. I think his height and speed and effort really bugged him. And Sobey had no answer. Bad game from him. These things happen. Team stat discrepancies, not a lot in it. I mean, it was a close game for most of it, but obviously 3-point percentage. Adelaide were 8 of 26 for 30%. Brisbane 12 of 32 for 37%, and hit the 4 more threes. That's 12 points. That's the game. And then the assists, Adelaide 16, Brisbane 21. So a 5 assist margin to Brisbane. The ball was off the floor, but in the hands of guys like Patterson in good spots where he could break guys down and make passes. Key points for this one, bad defensive thinking lost Adelaide this game. And I'm going to go into more detail about that. two plays stick out, of which Ruben Tarangi was a huge part of both. So Adelaide take a timeout at the 7 and 9 second mark of the fourth quarter. The score is 76-73. They hold the lead. Out of the timeout, there's a high screen from Bairstow. Conger doubles the ball handler. And my question is, did they need that double? Adelaide are very aggressive off pick and rolls. The screener's man often hedges or shows, sometimes into a double team or trap. More often than not, just a strong show and try to recover. Wiley drops off Tarangi to cover the rolling screener in Bairstow and just leaves Tarangi for a wide open three. He does scramble to contest, but it's too late. Tarangi got a good look at it. They tie it up. 5:25, same thing from Adelaide. On the screens, the guy defending the screener is hedging. On this play, Moore doesn't recover. Hangs in no man's land as Tarangi hits the 3, 78-80. And then again, at the 4:22nd minute mark, this is the big one. Tarangi picks Cam Glidden. Anthony Drimmick goes under the screen. Glidden gives it up to Kadee at the top. Tarangi, having softly rolled, sets a down screen on Drimmick again, who's already a long way off Glidden. Drimmick can't fight through the screen. Harry Froling is too far off. If you watch this play again, 4:22nd minute mark, he's not defending his man. He's not a part of the play. He's two steps off. And then Cam Glidden catches the ball for a three. And Ruben Tarangi set a couple of nice little picks, made a nice couple of reads, and blew this game wide open. That, all of a sudden, you go from being up three to down seven, 78-85. And then, you know, Harry Froling comes down the other end, misses a layup. You know what happens? Missed layups always go back the other end. They used to go back for layups. In this generation of basketball, comes back for a three. Glidden hits that one too. Takes it to 78-88. 21-2 scoring run in the fourth quarter to the four-minute mark. Adelaide just totally collapsed. When they didn't have Sobey helping them out, they kind of fell apart. Sad news out of that game is Ramon Moore goes down hurt. And that's really sad for them. He's the second league leader in assists, I think behind Nathan Sobey. So, Adelaide have got something to do. We'll talk about who they go to now. The question is, you lose Ramon Moore, who's a point guard. You're probably going to bring in another point guard with a little bit of NBL experience, but someone who, to this point hasn't been signed by a team. The likelihood they bring in an import is unlikely because they want Ramon Moore for the playoffs if they make it. So it's a tough situation for them. But, they're probably going to replace him like for like. And I'll talk about the options at the end of the show and the league news part. The first thing you probably got to do is Jory Wright's become pretty fond of Harry Froling. You've got to bump up Wiley's minutes. Those Ramon Moore minutes have to go to Wiley, and you've got to work out something else, whether you play more through Demetrius Conger bringing the ball up, and when you want to put Sobey off ball. Something to think about. I'm really interested to see what Adelaide do next round. I'll tell you who they've got. But for now, we're moving on to the next game of this round 13, and it was Sydney, 13-6, playing Illawarra, and Sydney were down 84-96. Illawarra just owned the second and third quarter. First quarter, Sydney were up 20-18. Second quarter, Sydney put up only 18 points. Illawarra put up 28. Third quarter, after a bad first quarter, you thought they'd respond at a halftime. They didn't. Sydney only scored 16 points to Illawarra's 26. And then Sydney make a last-ditch effort in the fourth quarter to make this closer than it was. I mean, they were down 20-plus at one point, but brought it back to a 12-point loss. But this was a bad one for Sydney, and it again showed me that they have trouble with split rounds. They can't go back-to-back. They played New Zealand on the Friday. This game was on the Sunday. And for the life of them, they just didn't have the gas to do it. They're an older team. They're a plodding team. They're a defensive team. And you got to be, when you're that sort of team, you got to be up for it every night. And when everyone in your starting five is over 30, makes it difficult. Top performers, Emmett Nah for Illawarra was great. 18 points, 87% from the field, 4 rebounds. Jordair Jett, 16 points, 63% from the field, 3 assists. Brian Conklin, 17 points, 54% from the field, 2 rebounds. Had a really good round. Melo Trimble hadn't gone crazy. May have been in contention for best of the round. For the Sydney Kings, Kevin Lish was the only guy who showed that he could back up a good night on New Zealand. 17 points, 50% from the field, 4 assists, 2 assists. You know, was pushing OJ Ogilvie at one point in this game. Was the only guy showing like, yeah, we're down, but we're still hanging around. The others, I think, they were tired. They were content to take the hit and the loss and regroup next round. Jerome Randall had 22 points. Missed a couple of bunnies when the game was kind of, when they were on that bad run in the second quarter, to start the second quarter, had 2 easy layups that, you know, they just set a pace for a team. You know, that was a part of a huge run by Illawarra. If he hits those, maybe things are different. Probably not. Let's look at the team stat discrepancies. Field goal percentage. Sydney shot 41% from the field. Illawarra shot 52, which is obviously a, you know, big scoring percentage. But, you know, when you also consider that Sydney hold their opponents to a, you know, opponent field goal percentage of 42%. So, you know, Illawarra shot 10% over that. You know, that's a lot. And they did that just from a lack of defensive intensity. But also they just took the right shots. I never saw Illawarra take a bad shot. Except maybe Cedric Jackson. Points in the paint was the other big stat discrepancy. Sydney, 30 points in the paint, not a bad tally, but Illawarra, 50, plus 20. And they did it sort of inside out. We'll talk about it in a second, how they did that, how they managed to take their bigs away from the hoop but still score at the basket. And then bench points. This is always tricky with Illawarra because they bring some of their better players off the bench, like Jordair Jett and Cedric Jackson and Anderson sometimes, and even Conklin's come off the bench, you know. So Sydney 16 bench points, Illawarra 49. Looking at the key points of this game, the second quarter. So to start the second quarter, Sydney go on a horrible spree. There's a 7-0 run to the 8:40 minute mark. To start the second quarter, it's Randall, Adnam, Bowen, Kickett, and Pinner, all bench players. At the 8:30 minute mark of the quarter, Gaze calls a timeout, at which time they've gone on a 9-0 run, Illawarra. At that time, he brings in Newley and Deng. By the time he brings the starters back, Bogut and Lish come back in at the 7:47 mark of that quarter. It's been a 14-0 run, and then Sydney get a free throw, but you know, Illawarra hit a 3, so it's a 17-1 run at one point. Even those only that last 3-pointers are scored with the starters on the floor, but they just found it so hard to get some acceleration up. You're looking at the third quarter. To start it, Illawarra are up 8, and then 2 guys in particular just blow this game apart. Todd Blanchfield is probably the third, but these two in particular, David Anderson and Brian Conklin, they just sort of took over. They did a beautiful thing where they were taking things out to the mid-range game, taking Bogut away from the hoop. Now, Bogut still got a few blocks in this game, but his impact was so minimized, and it was really good strategy from the Hawks. So Anderson had 6 of his 9 points in that quarter, and all were, you know, in the first 3 minutes of the quarter. And then Conklin was gone at the hoop, drew an intentional, unsportsmanlike foul on Bogut. You know, his energy and aggression is really special. Look good. Going back to sort of underperformers, Newley was not great in this game. I didn't record his stats, but you know, he struggled to, you know, play with intensity. I thought David Ware was bad in this one. 8 points, 2 of 9, 22% in 23 minutes. And then Kickett, 2 points, 0 of 6, didn't hit a shot from the field, 3 rebounds, and he played 17 minutes. And they just could, they had no answer for these two guys. But Illawarra looked great when, yeah, as I said, they had Anderson and Conklin kind of away from the hoop. Anderson out towards the three-point line, Conklin in the mid-range, and then were posting up the smaller Randall when they had Jackson or Jordair Jett. And it was getting a lot of little dump passes inside for layups. A lot of people on Twitter were really bagging out Sydney Kings bench in this one. Now, they did go on a horrible run to start the second quarter. I'm not denying that. But after the half, they were within striking distance to at least bring this close. And the deficit only got worse with the starters on the floor in the third quarter. So, you know, if this had come down to a close game, under 10, sort of 2-6 points, all right, then you look at that second quarter. But the Kings, even with the starters on, were not looking like they were going to do much. And it really showed me that this team is too reliant on Bogut defensively. And if you're an opponent coach in this league, you want to watch this game and you want to look at what Illawarra did. And if you've got the personnel to do it, you can really mess with this team. That's why a team like Adelaide scares me for Sydney, with the likes of Harry Froling stepping away from the hoop, and even Conga being a big guy away from the hoop, Wiley being so athletic, and DJ having a bit of range. So they worry me a lot, as well as other teams as well. But that was Sydney Illawarra. Moving on to the next game. This was a great game. Overtime game, you know which one I'm going to. It's Cairns, who were 3-15, bottom of the ladder coming into this one, against Melbourne, second in the league, 11-7. Cairns come out red hot in the first half. 25-18 in the first quarter, 21-14 in the second quarter. Then the third quarter, Melbourne start to get their groove. They outscore them by a point, 26-27. But then in the fourth, Melbourne score 22 points. The Cairns is 9. I mean, 9 points in a quarter. That's less than a point a minute for Cairns. And then we go to OT. And in the OT, Cairns put up 8 points, most of which came in the last sort of 30 seconds in the dog days of OT. And Melbourne put up 18 in overtime. Casper Ware had 11 of them himself. And they go on to win it by 10, 99-89. Top performers, Melo Trimble. 42 points, 59%, 3 rebounds, 2 assists. Trimble did not have a head up looking for his teammates on this one. He was looking at the hoop. But, you know, when you score 42 and you do it over 50%, hell, over 55%, nearly 60%, just go and score. Najuai, 18 points, 57% from the field, 5 rebounds, an assist, 3 turnovers, 2 blocks. Looks like a great game, and it was through 3 quarters. Played some 30 minutes and just ran out of steam, and we'll talk about it in a second. For Melbourne, Casper Ware was incredible. 27 points, 53% from the field, 6 rebounds, 6 assists. David Barley, in the absence of the still concussed DJ Kennedy, stepped up big time, 24 points, 58% from the field, 5 rebounds and assists. And then Josh Boone, who people have been down on, he's kind of been in the background of this team. When you've got such a, their backcourt is pretty happy to hold and control and shoot the ball. Casper Ware, Dave Barlow, Chris Goulding, DJ Kennedy to a lesser extent. You know, the guys that are pretty happy with it. But Josh Boone was a return to form in this one. 15 points, most of which in crunch time. 77% from the field, 15 rebounds, 5 of which were offensive, and 3 blocks. Underperformers, Chris Goulding, only 11 points, 26% from the field. Foul trouble again. And you could tell that when he got fouls, he was eager to make an impression on the game, and as a result, shot kind of wildly for 26%. NBL refs are on to him. He's a flopper, and they don't like it. And he's been in foul trouble the last 2 games, and hopefully he can start moving his feet a bit better, stop flopping. Devin Hall for Cairns had a bad game in this one. 2 points, 0 rebounds, an assist in near 30 minutes. His 2 points came with 40 seconds left in overtime. You know, to play 30 minutes and only score 2 points. I mean, Kevin Lish had a great game a little while ago where I think he went scoreless, but he did play some D on guys, and Devin Hall didn't really do that. Biggest team stat discrepancies, free throws. Cairns were 10 of 21. Melbourne were 25 of 34. Plus 15 from the line and plus 26% for Melbourne. Aggressive teams get to the line and they stop the clock, and when you're down, and Melbourne really showed me something in this game, and they've got me looking at this game. I know it's against Cairns, but from this game I got the impression that they're a real title contender, because the ability to go down that big and have Melo Trimble just smacking stuff in your face and take it and still be there going, all right, let's just stick to the game plan, and hopefully we're still hanging around and within a sniff to let our talent shine through. And it did. They're amazing. So rebounding margin, 36 to Cairns, 48 to Melbourne, and then plus 6 in the offensive rebounds. So that helped. Assists, Cairns only had 8 assists. And Nate Jawa, your biggest guy, had more than half of them. And Melbourne had 16, so double the amount of assists. The ball was up, the ball was moving. Points in the paint, Cairns had 50, Melbourne only 36. It was the only thing keeping them in it.
And that was Nate Jarwar. That was also Mel Trimble getting to the line. As much as I've talked up Nate Jarwar in this game, it was Josh Boone that kind of did it for me. The guy just kept running. He did not stop in the fourth. And when Jarwar was... Jawai, I can never pronounce his name. When Jawai was getting gassed, it was Josh Boone who took advantage. He had a couple of plays where one where literally he just got Boone took a rebound, gave it up to Casper Ware, and then ran ahead of the play and got it back for a wide open layup, running by Nate Jawai in the process. Cairns just have no composure and no idea where their most efficient points come from. They play totally one-out basketball. There's basically a secret society in Cairns where the ball doesn't go outside of the hands of Melo Trimble, Devin Hall, and DJ Newble. And sometimes, and like begrudgingly down into the paint, into Nate Jarwar. Melbourne finished with a 9-0 finish in the fourth quarter. Now, the big one that everyone's talking about is Barlow's three to tie it up and send it to OT. Now, did give Cairns a shot afterwards. There was time still on the clock, but the big play was Newball left Barlow to reach in on Chris Goulding, who then gave it back up to Barlow for the three. It was a really dumb play from Newball. The commentators knew it and they called it out, and it tied it up at 81 and it went through to overtime. And it just shows that immaturity and that lack of... And, you know, immaturity is one thing. There are a lot of young teams that play well and still are able to score some sort of points in the fourth quarter. Mike Kelly, I plead to you, you've got a decent little roster there. And I'm not saying you should be in the playoffs or even have a winning record, but you shouldn't be this bad and certainly not this bad in fourth quarters. When you've got a young team and you're a coach like that, you've got to have more of a handle on your team. If that means you have to get up and say to Melo Trimble, this play... this time down the floor and tell him what to run. Well, that's just what you got to do, because right now it's just all one out basketball for Cairns. When times get tough, they don't have a system. So I was talking about Josh Boone sort of taking advantage of Nate Jarwar. He looked lazy. He looked tired. He played over 30 minutes, which is not his thing. Again, Mike Kelly, you're going to manage those minutes. We all wish he could run out of game, but he can't. He's just too big. So he gave up two really bad scores. That one where he just got beat down the floor, and one where pick is set. Josh Boone sets a pick on Casper Ware's man on Melo Trimble. Nate Jarwar comes out to hard show on Trimble, and then just doesn't move his feet to get back, and it's literally pick. Casper Ware, I think, takes a single dribble, makes a pass over to Boone, who stuffs it. It was not a good look. But anyway, 16 unanswered points in the fourth quarter and overtime. Melbourne went on a 21-0 run at one point in this game. Not great. Melbourne coming back from 18 down to win this one. The fourth quarter was all Barlow and Boone. Barlow had 5 points, 2 offensive rebounds, an assist in the fourth quarter. Boone had 6 points, 4 rebounds, 2 of them offensive. Six total rebounds, 2 of them offensive, which he scored off in a block. And then Casper Ware in the overtime hit 3 threes and a 2 for 11 points. Guy was incredible and did it in front of Melo Trimble's mother. Just felt bad for him. And that was the round that was. Really good little round. We look at the ladder. Sydney Kings are still on top, 13-7. Only a game above the number 2 placed Melbourne United with 12-7. Perth Wildcats still hanging around, 12-8. They lose this week and they go down. And they lose this week and Brisbane win. Brisbane are going to go ahead of them on percentage points. Brisbane are fourth, as you can probably imagine, 11-9. Adelaide are fifth, 10-10. And with Ramon Moore down, it's such a shame. Sixth place is the Illawarra Hawks with 9-11. If you knew which Illawarra Hawk team was going to show up, you'd be able to bet on them and actually win some money. New Zealand Breakers are in seventh on 8-10, and I see their season kind of lingering out at this point, unfortunately. And then the eighth seed is, of course, the Cairns Taipans, 3-16. We look forward to round 14 on Thursday night at 7:50. Adelaide host Perth. I'm tipping Adelaide, the favourite in that one. I still think even with Ramon Moore out, they may move quick and get a replacement. We shall see. Friday night at 7:50, it's the Illawarra Hawks as they host the New Zealand Breakers. Illawarra are the favourites in that one, and I'm tipping them. Saturday at 2:50, Sydney host Adelaide. I think Sydney are going to win that one. I think they're going to be rested and into it. Saturday at 7:50, Brisbane play Cairns. I think Brisbane are too good for them. I think the hot streak of Cairns is set to die out. The venom, we've found the anti-vac at this point. Sunday at 3 o'clock. This one would be on go, I'd say, as is the Sydney game, as always. Perth are going to host Melbourne. Ooh, Melbourne are slight favourites, $1.87 to Perth's $1.93. I'm going with Melbourne. On the strength of that, I know it's a long way to travel, but I'm going with two Perth losses this round, and they will be the conversation all next week. And then Monday, 7:50 p.m., nice little one to come home from work with. Cairns host New Zealand Breakers. I'm going with New Zealand. It's good. It'll be fun to see Nature Y and Sean Long go at it, see how they do. League news. The question is DJ Kennedy ready to return for Melbourne United? He's now missed two games with that concussion from a car wreck. I think he'll be back. I was shocked around the silence surrounding Sean Long's comments about Bogut and the old guys and how he's the best player in the NBL. You know, Angus Brandt's pork chop comment was everywhere, whereas Sean Long's were kind of covered up a little bit. They spoke about it on Overtime, Cam Luke, Santa Maria, and Corey Williams. So check that out. Adelaide's Ramon Moore is injured, as we spoke about, with a left calf strain. Won't return until the end of the regular season. Liam Santamaria on Overtime mentioned some guys who could take his place, and he thinks the most likely signings are three-point guards, either Mason Bragg, who played with Perth last year, Sean Bruce, who played with Brisbane last year, or Damon Hire, who played for Cairns. They all seem to be kind of, you know, poking around the lower level leagues. I don't know a lot about them, so to find out my thoughts on them, I'm going to do a bit of research, see what they look like, and I'll be all over Twitter this week looking at those guys. Adelaide's Majok Deng is cleared to play. They feared he had a broken rib. He doesn't, so he'll be playing in the games this round. Sydney Kings have signed Ray Turner and have cut Deng Akuth. Deng Akuth, I believe, is from Perth, so maybe the Wildcats look at picking him up in the future or adding him onto the training roster or something like that. Ray Turner, don't know a lot about him. Played a lot of leagues. Seems to be an aggressive, athletic, power forward center. So I think after that Illawarra game, Bogut has said, I need help. I need more rest. And they've gone out and got this guy. But maybe that's the case, or just the simple fact of he's the best fit to sign. You know, I'm really shocked. This shows you, like, there's Sydney, top of the table, and their front office is still being aggressive and improving. Just don't know why Perth didn't do the same thing. I think it's a displaced loyalty. This was Worthington's, Mark Worthington's idea that they've got too fierce a loyalty to those bench guys who've been there for a long time. My thought is, if you went up to any of them and said, do you want to get a third import and improve the club, or do you want to hang around, they'd say no. You know, they're Wildcats. They'd say, we want the Wildcats to be better. And whether they take on a coaching role the rest of the year or a training role, you know, it's no shame in being over 30 and your career coming to an end. You know, don't take the team with you. And I'm not saying those players are doing that. I'm just saying, you know, you have a third import. You're a wealthy club like Perth. You've got great fans. Every year is a chance to win the title. You're sitting in third place and you don't go for it. I just think it's a mistake. That's all the news for the league. Here are all the calls to action, everyone. I'm on Twitter at NBLPocketPod, P-O-D. NBLPocketPod. As I said, I'll be taking a look at those Adelaide player signing options and Ray Turner for Sydney. Also on YouTube, again, NBL Pocket Podcast. Got a few videos up there. Hoping to get this will be up there. A lot of people don't have Apple iTunes, so I do put these on YouTube as well. And of course, I am on Apple Podcasts and iTunes, as you probably know if you're listening to it on there. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Guys, get behind the NBL. You know, go and see your local team. Get on Sportsbet and have a bet on stuff. It's always you know, even if you're a bit of a fair weather fan, you know, take a punt, have a pick on teams you think are going to win and go for it. You always cheer a bit louder when there's money on the line. You know, take a friend. You know, the league was great. The caliber of this round was fantastic. You know, the bottom team beating Wildcats. A lot of pushing, a lot of shoving, a lot of tough play. You know, some SHIT talk on Twitter. And yeah, some massive shots. I mean, Mella Trimble was so fun to watch this round. And guys, I'm rambling. And as I always say, go to the game, take your mother, take your sister, because if you don't, I will. Thanks very much, and I'll see you next week, round 14.